It ain't illegal yet. But they working on it. I want the young motherfuckers in here tonight, no matter what your nationality is, turn the motherfucking TV off for 1 week. It's called television programming. They telling you visually to program. You're being programmed. You watch it on the news. It was on CNN. It's true. I seen it on Fox. It's real. It's bullshit.
American media is a business.
Business has a mission, not to inform, but to entertain them.
It's never hearts and minds. It's never the threat of communism or the spread of peace. It's business.
The problem with the truth is that the truth is. You can't really shift the truth. That's why it's the truth. No matter how many facts you try to throw at it, no matter your angle or perceptions, you can't really spin the truth. You can spin perception. And the perception may affect your thought process and therefore your reality view of the truth. But the truth is.
Hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, we'll be able to merge our system with theirs, and of course with those of the rest of the world, to form some kind of a world brotherhood, a world union, a world government, to be exact.
The fact that the Washington Post had to brief America that Homeland Security finds it okay to detain your electronic media, your laptop or anything, your iPod, when you come into an airport in America, a foreigner or an American citizen.
One thing is for certain, and that is that there's a lot of crazy stuff flying through the air. It doesn't matter who's responsible for it, but what does matter is that there's a lot of different material that we can't see that is being broadcast through the air. Now, it's true that maybe some of it out there is mind control.
And now, the news for you.
And it's a new day on the internet. Today is Monday, February 6, 2012. This date in 1935, the popular board game Monopoly went on sale for the first time. And since that time, no game of Monopoly has ever been finished. Well, they've stopped, but they've never been finished. It always ends up with someone saying, "I've had enough! Fuck you, you're cheating!" and throwing the board in the air. So you are listening to the brand new blasphemy that is Newsreel X, the new WOG Global sit rep on core political tyranny, technology, trends for your headspace and timing. The news you need to stay alive and fight against core political tyranny that's trying to enslave you. You can follow along and check the facts on my Facebook, not for much longer, at facebook.com/NewsreelX. You are free to distribute, ridicule, destroy, or do anything else with the podcast as you see fit. We are not broadcasting from the Second Life. We are broadcasting from the cynical, cold First Life. The life where you now have the ability to talk to women without freaking out, but you're too old for them to give a shit. Now, Rant Media stands for free speech, and just by listening to this podcast, so do you. Now, you can hear us on Rant Radio Talk on Mondays at 9 and Thursdays at 5 p.m. The initial section I had on the show today, the comedy stylings of Eddie Griffith, who I've never thought was funny, but that is a great bit of his, and I think people should take that challenge seriously. So I'm saying to all of you WOGs out there, and all of you listeners, turn it off for a week. And I mean everything. Not just the TV. We're not going to cheat this by turning on Hulu on our computers or Netflix or anything else. Let's take a week and turn all this shit off. Turn the TV off. Turn the Netflix off. Turn the Hulu off. Let's get away from the programming and let our minds breathe a little bit. Let's talk about this. Hit me up on my Facebook page and tell me if I'm a fucking moron or not. But anyway, in You Like Your Privacy? You Are a Terrorist News! This is something that was pulled from publicintelligence.net as well as device.com, which device.com I never heard of before. It's run by a sci-fi channel, so it is part of the bigger evil problem. But this goes to a story of new publications that are being handed out by the FBI. So I'll just start this. A flyer designed by the FBI and Department of Justice to promote suspicious activity reporting in internet cafes lists basic tools used for online privacy as potential signs of terrorist activity. The document, part of a program called Communities Against Terrorism. Oh, that's a nice warm feeling. Lists the use of anonymizers or other means to shield IP addresses as signs that a person could be endangering or supporting terrorist activity. The use of encryption is also listed as a suspicious activity, along with steganography, the practice of using software to hide encrypted data in digital photos or other media. In fact, the flyer recommends that anyone overly concerned about privacy or attempting to shield the screen from views of others should be considered suspicious and potentially engaging in terrorist activities. Now, they didn't just print out these great little PDFs for people running internet cafes or places with free Wi-Fi. They also have ones for wholesale distributors of beauty supplies and medications, as well as general public ones. And there's also one for lawn and garden stores and truck stops. And they're really trying to get it from every angle here. But, time to start looking over, this is taken from device.com, same story. Time to start looking over your shoulder a little bit more often, since the FBI has released a flyer warning employees at coffee shops and internet cafes to be on the lookout for suspicious activities, quote unquote. Including not showing random people your computer screen. Well, I don't want them to see all the bestiality porn I like. According to this flyer, which the FBI and Department of Justice has distributed to various businesses, people in coffee shops or internet cafes should be considered suspicious if they exhibit some of the following. Here is the list. Overly concerned about privacy. Always paying cash. Now, this is another thing that we should move towards. Evidence of residential-based internet providers. So I guess if you're signing onto your Comcast or AOL. Using anonymizing portals and the means to shield IP addresses, so probably proxies. Communicating through a PC game. Now, this one is funny. It's all those people playing World of Warcraft or whatever else. Any communication through your game, you're a terrorist. Obtaining maps and diagrams of transportation. Downloading or transferring files with how-to content, quote-unquote. Such as information about electronics. The overall philosophy here seems to be that if someone has something to hide, or even if they have nothing to hide but prefer privacy, it's suspicious. Looking up maps in public? That's suspicious. Social gaming? Super suspicious! Paying for things with money? Oh, that's a big deal, lo suspicioso, just for you. So, let's skip over all of this fun stuff and just get straight to the document, straight from the horse's mouth. So, you can look this up, get your own copy. Has a great FBI logo and the Bureau of Justice Assistance, which I've never heard of before. Are they new? But it goes, Communities Against Terrorism, Potential Indicators of Terrorist Activities Related to Internet Cafes. What should I consider suspicious? Same stuff we talked about. what kind of activities. And then on the right side has a great, what should you do? You should gather information about individuals without drawing attention to yourself. Identify license plates, vehicle descriptions, names used, languages spoken, and ethnicity. Do not collect metadata content or source electronic communications. They're doing enough of that themselves. They don't need you getting in on that business. Do not do additional logging or online activity or monitor the communications. If something seems wrong, notify law enforcement authorities. But do not jeopardize your safety. Oh, it's, this is going to, this is going to be bad. There's going to be a lot of people, and I feel bad for any, tourists who may be visiting our fine, North American country here, hitting the old internet cafe to tell everyone else what a great time they're having here, and having them dragged away in handcuffs, sent to Gitmo. There's even, like, a little password to use when you call the FBI to tell them about this stuff. It says mention tripwire, quote unquote. So that's for the internet cafes. Let's get into the beauty and drug stores. Suspicious people have burn marks on their hands or face. They may be even missing hand and fingers and brightly colored stains on clothing and strange odors. So, look out for tie-dyed hippies with missing fingers. Also, if they alter their appearance, they're only interested in chemicals, even though they do not work at a salon. Comments involving radical theology, vague or cryptic warnings, and anti-US sentiments. Fun times. Same sort of stuff. Be part of the solution. Require valid IDs for all customers. Keep records of purchases. Talk to customers. Ask questions. That's right. Spy on your neighbor, America. Keep spying. Make note of suspicious statements. If something seems wrong, notify. And use that great little password, tripwire. So this goes on to what the general public should be looking for. Which, when I'm walking down the street, I wonder how many phones are ringing off the hook in the FBI offices. People involved in terrorist activity often exhibit indicators that, if observed, would identify a potential impeding crime or terrorist attack. Like waving a sign over the head saying, "I'm going to bomb this." The following is a list of some of the characteristics of such persons that should be aware of. That's written kind of weird. Unusual requests for information. So, stopped at a gas station. So, requests regarding sensitive information, such as security procedures, facility operations. Unusual interest in high risk or symbolic targets. Surveillance, note taking, drawing of diagrams, inappropriate photographs. So, if you're out there filming porn at one of these symbolic targets, you're in trouble, because inappropriate photographs are going to get you on the bad boy list. Other unusual activity, people acting suspiciously, people departing quickly when seen or approached, people in places where they do not belong, and vehicles that appear to be overloaded. This is wonderful. So there's a full list of these that you can look up, and they give a general idea of what kind of suspicious activity you could get flagged for. You might be just trying to go about your day and doing things on your own, and maybe not wanting to become part of the system, constantly giving your name and credit card information over to people, and that's enough. Using cash is one of these big red flags. Oh, there's this other great one here about the potential indicators of terrorist activities related to sleepers. So I think they're sleeper cells. You could recognize these sleepers when they arrive from other countries where violent military Islamic groups are known to operate. Long unexplained absences for purposes of religious education, charity work, or pilgrimage. Or they travel to countries where militant Islam rules. Operational preparations, study of technical subjects that would help support an operation, working in an area that serves as a cover for preparing an operation, engaging in paramilitary training, possessions of such items as detonators or personal protective equipment used in biological incidents. Biological incidents. No gas masks for you. Wanting to go to that rally and have a gas mask so you won't get pepper spray right in your eyes? Nope. You're not getting any. This is probably the funniest one, though. It's the potential indicators of terrorist activities related to tattoo shops. Need to get this to my resident tattoo artist. People who provide identification that is inconsistent or demands identity privacy. Insists on paying with cash. There it is again. Significantly alters their appearance. Having missed hands, fingers, chemical bones, or strange burns or strange odors. What are they looking for that they're not just coming out and saying? Are we supposed to be, like, afraid of Captain Hook right now? Like, they don't want to just tell us, like, you're not going to believe this shit, but Captain Hook is fucking coming for you. That's what it sounds like. Make suspicious comments regarding anti-U.S. radical theology, vague or cryptic warnings that suggest or appear to endorse the use of violence in support of a cause. And people or groups who make repeated returns with multiple individuals requesting identical tattoos. Request a tattoo and state intent to target specific groups or individuals. Which... I guess this would fall into the whole the white power thing, right? Like getting big swastikas and like kill darky tattooed on yourself. But I think they're getting most of those in prison, so they're not going to be passing these out in prison. And inquire about unusual methods of tattooing or placement of tattoos, which could allow the concealment of extremist symbols. Hell, I have some rather not extreme symbols on my body. My first tattoos were all kept hidden. I was always wanting to put them where they wouldn't stand out unless I was wearing wife beaters or some other sort of revealing clothing. I'm a damn terrorist. So in a lighter news story right now, let's go into Let's Make Romney Fabulous News. This is from abcnews.com. Romney glittered at Minnesota rally. The protesters, known for throwing glitter on former presidential candidates Michelle Bachmann, Gingrich, and Pawlenty, succeeded today in covering Mitt Romney with colorful confetti right as he entered the warehouse where he was scheduled to hold a campaign rally. The protesters who threw the glitter on Romney are suspected to be part of the Glitterati and Occupy Minneapolis, who have used the confetti to call attention to candidates who they believe do not support gay rights. Which is, I love these guys. I love these guys. I love the cake guys. A simple gesture, even for those non-violent freaks that love non-violence, a simple non-violent gesture automatically puts these people on the spot that they have to acknowledge a story. If it wasn't for the Glitterati doing this and bringing more attention to the gay, gay, bisexual, transgendered... gay, lesbian, I can never remember the abbreviation and all the things. But it goes from being a non-story to, as soon as the incident happens, not only is the candidate or person instantly fabulous, but also it's a story. It brings up, why is this happening in the first place? So at that point, Romney took the microphone. Security guards moved in to remove the glitter bombers. Yeah, they got to put that in. Some were removed by security, but one remained because Romney was hit again on exiting the event. So keep it on. I'm definitely a big fan of the Glitterati, and keep it up. So another fun thing here is it goes into I guess to warn any other of you protesters who might be thinking about making these big, powerful men seem like the butt of a joke. Romney's private security was with him today. This was the last day before the Secret Service will start offering the candidate and his family protection. So no more Mr. Nice Guy. No more Mr. Clean. He's going to have Secret Service there. So if you step up with your glitter, you might get a Glock in the face. So be careful out there, but keep it going. And in school loan pyramid scheme news. So this is the first thing I want to talk about is this image that was posted by collegescholarships.org and jess.net. And this is a great little, I think it was a PDF. It's a great little sort of infographic that we'll go into some of the stats afterwards, but it's called The Student Loan Scheme, Gateway Drug to Debt Slavery. Everyone knows we Americans are swimming in credit card debt, but just this year, a new debt has quietly suppressed our consumer spending addiction. Student loans, now at $829 billion. Which, new story I'm going to bring up next, it's hit the $1 trillion mark, which is much more than any of the credit card debt that we're holding in this country. So how did this happen? Goes back 1965, Lyndon Johnson signs the Higher Education Act as part of the Great Society. Millions of students are now able to afford college with federally guaranteed loans and scholarships. 1978, after stories surfaced of some doctors and lawyers charging their student loan debt by filing for bankruptcy immediately after graduation, the Bankruptcy Reform Act disallowed charges for 5 years after the first payment. The actual discharge rate at this time was less than 1%, so they were creating a law out of hysteria, as usual. 1990, the non-discharge period was extended to 7 years, so 7 years after you start paying, you can't get away from it just by filing for bankruptcy. 1998, Congress completely eliminated the ability to discharge student loan debt in bankruptcy. The same rules apply to debt from criminal acts and debt from fraud. Loans for education are the only type of loan that has this federal no-escape clause. In 2005, amendments to the bankruptcy code provide the same non-discharge protection to private student loan lenders. So both public and private now. Now all student loans, government and private, are almost impossible to discharge. Additionally, the following protections were removed from student loans. The Statute of Limitations on Collections, Truth in Lending Act, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the Right to Refinance, and the Adherence to Statute Usury Laws. The hardest collection methods are now reserved for student loans. Miss a few payments, and you can be subjected to wage garnishments without a court order, suspensions of state professional licenses, garnishment of Social Security disability income, and withholding of IRS tax refunds. So it's goes in, they have these little speech boxes saying, now wait just a minute, why are you treating our fledgling students like criminals? And then it has Albert Lord, who's the CEO of Sallie Mae Corp, saying, because it's obscenely profitable, of course. So here's how it works. This is the fun stuff. Sallie Mae is the largest originator of student loans. Sallie Mae loans you your fine student loan money. So the federal government guarantees the full amount of the loan that was given. So the federal government says, okay, we want these people to go to school. We'll guarantee the loan. So you're unable to make your loan payments of whatever they are. So after 270 days, the loan goes into default. At that point, when you're in default, the federal government pays Sallie Mae the money it promised them. Sallie Mae is no risk. They're either going to get paid by the government or paid by you. So now the government needs to get back the money. So they send your information to this debt collection agency, General Revenue Corporation, GRC. GRC adds 25% to the loan as a collection fee. They also get a 28% commission on the loan that they get you to pay. Now here's the fucked up shit. GRC is owned by Sallie Mae. They're part of Sallie Mae. So GRC takes the money from the government, adds 28% and 25% on top of that, and then takes it back. So They got money from your paycheck, money from your tax returns, any way they want to do it, even without court orders, until you pay. And here's the lovely thing. There's no statute of limitations on this stuff. If they have to take it out of your Social Security checks, they're going to. This is why it's so profitable for everyone involved. Sallie Mae gets huge returns with no risk, and the government eventually gets its money back with interest. Defaulting student loans are a money-making machine. It even benefits schools. So, this money is worse than a loan shark, really. It's the government and Sallie Mae are playing you for a complete fool. And if you can't find a job and if you're not able to pay it back, they're going to take every cent that they can from you. So 25% of government student loans default. At community colleges, it's 30%, and at two-year colleges, it's 40%. At the height of the subprime mortgage mess, default rates were 25%. And those were loans people could walk away from if bankruptcy was ever bailed out by the government. But don't expect any bailouts for students, since it's the government doing the loan sharking here. So this is, it goes even further. This thing just goes on and on, and it's a wealth of information, and it's laid out in a lovely way. I want to print hundreds of these in full color and just plaster them all over high schools around here. Didn't Obama overhaul the student loan program this year? He called it one of the most significant investments in higher education since the GI Bill. And it goes into his bill. Obama's changes are big winners for the government and taxpayers. He basically cut lenders like Sallie Mae out of the loop by eliminating subsidies. So all loan profits that used to go to private lenders now go back to the government. Despite the rhetoric, this is not a big win for students. They still don't have the consumer protections and rights they need. Huge for-profit collections agencies like GRC have been replaced with huge non-profit collection agencies like Ed Fund, whose job is the same. Spin a $37,000 loan into a $100,000 repayment. Since the government is making even more money, they have even less incentive to keep the prices of tuition in check. So it goes down and gives some great ideas for paying for college without falling into these traps. But I think this should be required reading for anyone who wants to get into higher education. So to continue on the school pyramid scheme news, I have workers.org here. Says student loans approach $1 trillion. As the total student debt in the United States exceeds $1 trillion, which is more than the total credit card debt, according to the Federal Reserve, and some financial analysts are pointing to another bubble being created. Students are graduating with more than $25,000 of average debt, the latest figures from 2008 say. Since these figures are 4 years old, all the available data of tuition increases, as well as lower wages, points to an even higher figure. More than two-thirds of all students in public and private school need loans to pay for their costs. The debt that is incurred by graduating with a professional school studies is substantially higher, according to statistics from the DOE, Department of Education. Debts of over $150,000 are not unheard of. So people going for their master's or any other sort of professional degree. So $150,000. And this stuff, as I mentioned before, you can't run from it now because of all of the changes in the laws with bankruptcy and everything else. The only way to get away from this now is by death. And that's what it says in the article. Now, in small victory news on this front... This is from the New York Times. Online campaign prompts Sallie Mae to change fee policy for loan suspensions. On Thursday, 3 months after Bank of America backed down from imposing a $5 monthly debit card fee in response to an online change.org petition that collected 300,000 signers, Sallie Mae, the nation's largest private student loan provider, changed its fee policy in response to an online petition. For years, Sallie Mae has required unemployed people who could not afford their monthly payments to pay a $50 per loan fee every 3 months to suspend their payments temporarily. This was used as a good faith deposit, quote unquote, but it was neither credited to the borrower's account or nor refunded. So this is money that you give them just to look the other way for 3 months. They're not putting it towards your account, and they're not giving it back to you when you do make a payment. So this poor girl, Steph Gray, a New Yorker who owes $600 a month on 4 loans, saw it as a predatory effort to squeeze blood from a generation of turnips. In November, she started a petition. Tell Sally Mae stop the unemployment penalty with change.org. Mrs. Gray, who paid $300 to Sally Mae in forbearance fees, had another $150 due for January. She did not pay the fee, and this week her loans became delinquent. Off to collections. On Thursday morning, wearing a cap and gown. Was she wearing anything else? It'd be kind of sexy if it was just a cap and gown. And accompanied by Molly Catchpole, the nanny who started the Bank of America petition, Mrs. Gray visited the Washington offices of Sally Mae to hold a news conference and deliver the petition, which had attracted 77,000 signatures. Which, she certainly has a lot more faith in the system than I do by going through all this process, the petitions and everything else. Big business, big money, big government doesn't give a shit. But Thursday afternoon, Sally Mae blinked. In the quoted statement, "We'd given careful consideration to our policy from time to time, and we're changing it to apply the good faith payment to the customer's balance after they resume a track record of on-time payments." So, once you start paying in a reasonable speed, then they'll put the money to your account. But they're still going to ask for the $50, and if you don't pay it, they're going to push you into delinquency. So it's a small victory, you know. It's I guess with things being the way they are right now, they did not want the bad press, push it off the front pages for a couple days, let something else take over. You know, maybe some young white girl will disappear, and then they can get back to milking us. They never really give up. They continue the process. They just. Sometimes got to slow it down a bit. In Google Exodus news, this is from Washington Post. It's from a little bit ago. I wanted to touch on this one in the last show, but because of my foul mood and lack of time, didn't get into it. But as you guys probably know, Google will soon know far more about you and what you do on the web. The web giant announced Tuesday that it plans to follow the activities of users across nearly all of its sites, including YouTube and Gmail, also its leading search engine. Consumers who are logged into Google services won't be able to opt out, which means we just gotta get the fuck out. And experts say the policy shift will invite greater scrutiny from federal regulators on the company's privacy and competitive practices. Yeah, the government doesn't give a shit about that. It'll make the government's job easier, and that's what they want. There's a reason why the government and Google are tied together so tightly. So here in the Washington Post, they have a great little FAQ about this. What exactly will this do to me? How will it help? How will it affect me? This move will help Google better tailor its ads. So they'll be pulling more money that way. Google's new privacy announcement is frustrating and a little frightening, says Common Sense Media Chief Executive James Steyer. Never heard of the guy. Can I just... do these guys just give themselves fucking titles? do I just call, AP or Fox or whatever these stations and say, oh yeah, I'm the Common Sense Media Chief Executive for... I'm the specialist on deep-fried Twinkies. So whenever you have a story about deep-fried Twinkies come up, you gotta pay my airfare to your studios, put me up in a hotel for the night so I can get on and talk about the idiosyncrasies of the deep-fried Twinkies. Even if the company believes that tracking users across all platforms improves their services, consumers should still have an option to opt out. Especially kids and teen who are avid users of ads and always about the kids and teens who are avid users of YouTube, Gmail, and Google Search. Well, they want us to be part of the system. Google Google can collect information about users when they activate an Android phone, sign into their accounts, or enter search terms. So those people grabbing the newest Android phone, they're in it deeper than the rest of us. Some say Google's move is aimed squarely at Apple and Facebook, and we know where that's heading. So this is just another lovely conglomeration of our information and tracking. Especially when you add the cell phone into it, and it's like, then they have constant GPS tracking of where you are. So going into the FAQ, what is Google doing? In a nutshell, Google is taking information from almost all their services, including Gmail, Picasa, YouTube, and Search, and integrating the data so we can learn more about you. Scary. What kind of information are they collecting? Almost anything that's already in the Google ecosystem. Calendar appointments, locations, search preferences, contacts, personal habits. Just to name a few. So if it bothers you, as it bothers me of a company that's able to parse information as quickly and as finely as Google is, knowing all of these things about you, it's time to get off. If you have to use Google for a work email or any of that, like the company I use, the company I work for uses the business version of Gmail. Best thing to do, which is what I've started to do, is use Outlook to pull my messages out of Gmail via POP3 protocol. So it's pulling the email out without me having to go to the Gmail page and sign in. If I have to go to the page and sign in, then it's turning on their little cookie that's then watching all the rest of my search of my searching and surfing behavior, and then sticking that all together into a nice little folder that is the me folder. So it says, interesting, tell me more. Also from all this, Google will be able to ensure that our spelling suggestions, even of our friends' names, are accurate because you've typed them before. Ooh, that's frightening. Google says it's committed to data liberation and that'll allow you to take your information elsewhere if you want to leave. So, as I'm suggesting now, get out. What I mentioned before in the rant chat room, and to some friends of mine as well, is that someone needs to figure out a way to come up with a service that's almost a proxy search of YouTube. It's like YouTube is a great tool, and there's a lot of videos, even the stupid shit that you may want to see, keyboard cat and all that fun stuff. But it'd be great if there was just an interface, a website you go to, like youtubeproxy.com, and you go there, and it has just search. And you type in your little search. Okay, I want to see Keyboard Cat. Type in your search. It queries YouTube from its own IP address, and then just hosts the results. Pretty much it's like running the search on YouTube and then just hosting the results from the query on its page, and then you hit play, and then it's playing it through this proxy. If I had more time in the day, I'd gladly like to do it myself and just get it done. Of course, they'll try to sue the shit out of me, probably, or sue the shit out of anyone who's running this sort of thing. For copyright violations, because I believe in their little user agreement. Anyone that uploads a video, it's then property of YouTube and Google. So, this is just a this should be a big red flag to us with them coming out with this new agreement. And it's funny that they'd even warn us. Like, have they been doing this for a while? And parts of our government that may be not too keen about that have warned them about some of the issues involved in it, and they've decided to make everything that they're doing legal by going and changing your user agreement. I don't know. I have no idea, but it's they've probably been doing it for a while. Why tell us now? So never mind that. But I will not be making any Polish jokes anytime soon news. Poland halts ratification of international internet copyright law under mass protest. Gotta love these people out in Warsaw. This is just from this past weekend, February 3rd, in Warsaw. Poland's prime minister, which I couldn't name the guy, says he's suspending the ratification process of an international copyright treaty after widespread protests and attacks on government websites. Donald Tusk said Friday that first, a wider discussion must be held on the issue to include internet users' privacy and protection. So the U.S., Japan, and other countries, I've been pushing Poland to sign this, saying that it's needed in the fight to the fight for pirated materials and keeping them out of the hands of our children and saving puppies and all that other crap. And because the people of Poland have really shown their strength and their force and come out in the streets protesting this. I saw some videos of old ladies out in the streets with their walkers and signs. That the prime minister, probably covering his own ass and wanting to stay in his position, said, we're not taking this any further. We're gonna look into it, and we're not going to sign this, and let's see what happens. So, you're not going to hear any submarines with screen doors or solar-powered flashlights or any of those old stupid jokes. You're not going to be hearing them from me. At least, we'll see how this goes. And then, then I'll get into it. In Bork news, among the treasures of recently released WikiLeaks cables, we find one whose significance has bypassed Swedish media. In short, every law proposal, every ordinance, and every governmental report hostile to the net, youth, and civil liberties there in Sweden in the recent years have been commissioned by the U.S. government and industry interests. This is taken from the Folkving.net. It says that since 2006, the Pirate Party there in Sweden has claimed that new laws that have been brought up have all been part of a greater whole, a whole controlled by American interests. It has sounded quite like a bit of conspiracies are us, but the Pirate Party was right on every detail. The hunt for ordinary Joes who share music and movies with one another has been behind the largest dismantlement of civil liberties in the modern history, and American interests have been behind every part of it. Well, this doesn't surprise me at all, considering our politics here in the U.S. are bought and sold by large industry. Why should it be any different to other countries? We treat ourselves this bad. Why can't we treat the rest of the world this bad? So there was, in the document, it shows six demands that the IIPA, consisting of record and movie companies, has pushed on the Swedish government. Things like three strikes rule, making it possible to disconnect people from the internet without trial, prosecution to the fullest extent of the law for the owners of Pirate Bay. They've been trying to take them all down for a long time. Transfer scarce police resources from investigating real crime, devoting them to safeguarding American monopolistic interests. Take large-scale initiatives against people sharing music, movies, and porn. Make it possible for the copyright industry to sue people with a minimum of hassle, and abolish the messenger immunity, making internet service providers liable for copyright monopoly infractions happening on their wires. So they've been pushing for these things, and slowly these laws have been coming to fruition, and the Pirate Party in Sweden is pointing it out and saying, not only do we think the U.S. government and the U.S. industry have been pushing for these, but we have the cables to prove it that were leaked via WikiLeaks. Gotta love those guys. It's all scary stuff. Three strikes rule. So what are they going to do? Chop your fingers off of the third strike? Can't type anymore. Can't surf the net. Sorry, I used the mouse of my dick. So chop all the fingers off you want. What's funny is number five here, make it possible for copyright industries to sue people with a minimum of hassle. It would just be easier if that's what they tried to do. I wouldn't be so upset if they were doing their own investigations and they were able to point out people that they felt were taking money out of their hands, and also show that people really were, by pirating, taking money out of their hands and food out of their children's mouths. And then, yeah, go sue them. Go to court. But no, they want to take police off the street to fight this this digital crime that isn't really crime. Wonderful. But this leak shows it from top to bottom, that industry is not only buying all of our politicians and politics in US, UK, Japan, but now they're spreading into the great northern countries. Hopefully there'll be a lot more resistance there. So, in Eat What I Tell You To, Not What I Eat news, GM Foods not served in Monsanto cafeteria. This is from crisisboom.com. This is an article from a little while ago, but it's came across it when I was trying to do some research on other things. The fight to ban genetically modified foods has won more converts. Some employees of Monsanto, the company that is doing most to promote GM products. The Independent newspaper reported that there is a notice on the cafeteria of the Monsanto pharmaceutical factory in High Wycombe, Buckinghamshire. Buckinghamshire, advising customers, as far as practical, GM soya and maize have been removed from all food products served here in our restaurant. We have taken the steps to ensure you, the customer, can feel confident in the food that we serve. I'm not even going to rant about this. I think the story speaks for itself. So in this week's Cyberpunk kit, this actually isn't an item, but it's pertaining to something that we probably, every one of us should have, is a pair of boots, a good pair of boots. If your feet aren't protected, you're screwed. So here, taken from backpacker.com, an old issue back in 2008, they asked a specialist about how to make your boots last. Four soul-saving tips from a veteran boot doctor. In this this day's daily hack, we're going to our good old friend Alton Brown on how to make beef jerky at home. No need to go out and buy any of those dehydrators or any of that fancy equipment. It's all done by using a fan and fan filters. So I got the video address here. You can check that out. And maybe if you make a big helping of beef jerky, you will send me out a serving or two, because I am getting a hungry. I got a hanker for a hunk of cheese, I'll tell you that much. But that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back next week with the news that you need to survive. This show is free to distribute. Give it to your grandma, give it the finger, give it a chance. If you have any info you'd like to send me, you can reach me at newsreelx@gmail.com. Now that's soon to change as I'm getting off the whole Gmail thing. If you like the music in the background, you have been listening to Imperial Teen. It was their album that came out back in 1998 called What Is Not to Love. I used to love to listen to these guys, and it turns out they have a new album that just came out as well. So I thought I would reintroduce myself with their old album before listening to the new album. As a wise man once said, we'll never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. Until next time, that's what Sean Kennedy might have said. In connectivity, in strength, end of line. I
I you, I you, I you, I you, I you.